Welcome to the One Up Project.
Money is fuel that allows you to do things. It doesn't need to be taboo.
What you don't want to do is wake up at 65 realizing you did something you hated and have regret.
Go and find people who will give you advice for nothing.
This is a space for personal growth and money chat with new perspectives every Monday.
This bit of content, listening to this, is going to be a small little breadcrumb of something that makes them think a little bit differently.
For all the things we were never taught but should have been.
At the end of the day, the most important person is yourself, and if you're not happy with your own choices, then you're never going to be happy.
Kia ora everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the One Up Project podcast. Today's episode is both a special and monumental one, as it is the first time I have interviewed a deaf person using interpreters. And Sarah, who we'll talk about in a second, was kind enough and generous enough to offer her time as an opportunity for me to explore her experiences as someone who is deaf, and was willing to be vulnerable about the ways her experiences have been shifted as a result. So Sarah Marie Gillespie is a multimedia designer who is profoundly deaf, which means she cannot hear under 95 decibels, and uses Auslan. She's a very curious and thoughtful person and aligns so much with One Up and what we're about here. We have had many conversations over time through One Up, and so it makes me extremely happy that now people get to listen in on one of those through an episode today. I'm so grateful that she would trust me with the opportunity to explore her story and ask a little bit more about the things she had experienced, especially within the recruitment and job hunting space. Understanding how to create access in particular is something that is really, really important to me, and how we can build solutions that are truly meaningful and helpful for people. Sarah definitely helped guide us on how to create more inclusive and accessible workplaces. Sarah, you are an incredible woman, and we are so grateful to have you on the One Up Project today. Everyone else, I know you are going to learn so much from this episode. Please let me know what you thought. I will pass it on to Sarah as well, and let me introduce you to her. Sarah, it is so incredible to have you here, as well as our two other guests today. We are also joined by two Auslan interpreters who will be translating for Sarah and I throughout this episode. Welcome everyone to the podcast. I'm really grateful we could all be here today. Sarah, how are you? How have you been?
Hi, Sarah. It's lovely to meet you. It's so great to be here.
I really appreciate your time. I know this is going to be one of my favorite conversations to date, so I thought we could jump straight into the conversation with an article that you had sent me previously by Jess Colgan of Ginger Snap. It was a beautifully written article, and I'm going to link it below for anyone that is interested. There was a story within the article you sent me about one of your experiences and a surprise package, in air quotes. Could you please share with us what a surprise package is?
Last year, my really good friend Jess interviewed me, and let me explain. I didn't highlight my deaf identity prior to the interview. So when I arrived, I had organized interpreters to attend the interview, and my potential employer at that time realized that I was a deaf person. They were curious as to why I hadn't highlighted that, because they were surprised at the interview that I'd arrived with an Auslan interpreter and I was deaf. What I wanted them to do was really focus in on the skill set that I came with rather than focusing in on my deafness. And so I was the surprise package because I turned up with an Auslan interpreter and I was deaf, and they had no idea that that was the case earlier on. I felt like if I'd put that into my CV, I probably wouldn't have got an interview.
Was this something you had previously done before, or was this experience you were referring to the first time that you had that with an employer?
Oh, it was a frequent experience, and I never put my deaf identity onto my CV, and so I often experience that surprise. And well, my experience being that I probably, in all likelihood, wasn't going to get an interview if I did put that into my CV.
And typically, what were the reactions of surprise? Were they more positive or negative?
It was quite a mix, actually, Sarah. I wanted the focus to be on my skill set, not on my deafness. I could do my job. I could certainly adhere to the job description parameters, and that was to be the focus in my mind, not the fact that I was a deaf person.
Yeah, absolutely. Because job hunting for so many of us, no matter who we are and who is going through it, is really, really tough and can be a really difficult process. So what have been some of the added challenges, in addition to the things we've just spoken about, that you have faced through this process as a deaf woman that others might typically be unaware of?
From my own personal experience, and deaf people don't have the same experiences across the board, but many do, it is difficult. And I really struggled to find employment. I had to be really determined and just keep trying. I applied for, I think, probably 500 jobs, and I might have got interviews for 5 of them. And I'm talking about a year-long time frame. Later on, when I developed my skills, that enhanced my ability to get interviews. However, my career journey has not been a smooth one. It was more a sink or swim kind of experience. I didn't have anyone I could lean into to seek advice and counsel and guidance and learn how to navigate this professional space that I was now entering. Every time I was successful in attaining an interview, out of my own pocket, I would have to fund interpreters. At that time, the NDIS had not been established, the National Disability Insurance Scheme, that now sees support for interviews and the like for deaf people. But when I was starting out, that wasn't in existence, and I was paying for interpreters out of my own pocket. I was on a job seeker allowance, which was about $15,000 a year. So out of that, I had to live, and I also had to fund interpreters, which other people who were interviewing at the time didn't have that additional consideration nor that outlay of funds. It certainly was a mountain climb, my endeavour to find employment, full of highs and lows, finally plateauing when I found employment.
And so how would you describe the space you're in now within your career? And I suppose yourself as well, having had to navigate that, what seems like most of the time alone and within your own mind.
I think if I look back from where I began to where I am now, it's vastly different. My workplace now is for a deaf organisation, so more inclusive considerations are made. I communicate in my own language every day. I communicate in a culturally safe organisation every day. We have what we call a deaf and a hearing world that, as a deaf person, you have to navigate every day. I think that working in the broader community inside of what I would call a hearing organisation, there's no awareness around deafness. The work's interesting, but navigating the space every day is difficult. But it's allowed my skill development to occur. It's a challenge working in a hearing space. It pushes me out of my comfort zone every day. So I'm able then to take those skills, those learnings, those endeavours that I've had to put into play in a hearing world and bring them across into a deaf space. So now I work for Convo Australia in content production, marketing. It's a service that's offered 24/7 to the broader deaf community. So they can access interpreters 24/7. And it doesn't require any pre-booking. You can have a face-to-face conversation in real time by connecting to the app, connecting to an interpreter, and then chatting to whoever you're with at the time. That's my current position in the deaf space, quite different from the other workplaces that I've experienced. And I guess highlighting again that not every deaf person's experience is the same as mine.
Yeah, it sounds like an incredible organisation, which I'll have linked below as well for everyone. It seems like over time you've managed to find workplaces who have had more elements of psychological safety, especially for deaf people. From your experience, what do you think are those elements of a workplace that create psychological safety and inclusivity?
It's a great question, Sarah. As you know, job access under the Employment Assisted Fund, EAF, they provide organisations training in terms of deaf awareness. Have a look at the website, job access, for more information, more detailed information there. There's a $12,000 fund available for deaf staff in this instance. It used to be $6,000. It's been increased to $12,000, which is great. However, $12,000 is insufficient, simply not enough to cover the cost of interpreters for a year. I'll highlight a friend of mine's experience. So she has $12,000. She has 3 team meetings per week. So each meeting is roughly 2 hours long, which would be the interpreter booking. So it equates to roughly $750 a week. That equates to $46,000 a year. $12,000 certainly does not come close to covering all of those requirements, and the funding diminishes quickly. Deaf people might need to attend interviews or consultation meetings. With a reduction in the ability to financially cover off on the meetings and the like, it inhibits their ability to be promoted, to be well across the business area. Of course, business have financial concerns. Of course they do. However, the EAF funding, the $12,000 that's available, and as I've said, it's not enough to cover off on all the interpreting requirements. And businesses don't always have the opportunity to cover off on the gap that exists between what the requirements are and what the $12,000 offers, which inhibits a deaf person's ability to be potentially an active participant in the business, let alone being promoted. But business needs to work out how to ensure accessibility. I'm not saying it's easy, but I am suggesting that people with a disability, people who are deaf, have the same opportunity for promotion, the same opportunity to be actively involved in the business. In my experience working for hearing organisations, I didn't work with interpreters that often. And this was because usually meetings were organised last minute or the meetings would change. And the requirements for booking interpreters mean that they need to be booked out a week or 2 weeks prior to a meeting. So it made it nigh on impossible for me to book interpreters for meetings that occur last minute or that are changed in time. I'm therefore expected to listen in on the team meetings. This leads to listening fatigue and eye fatigue, which impacts on my mental health, both at work and in my home life. And now I'm not just talking about my own experience. There are other deaf people who have a similar experience.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Sarah. I think there is responsibility on the business to find a way. It seems to me often like the access to the support might be an issue, say financially for a company. But before that, the company needs to ask the question of the person, you know, what's their experience? What support do you need? And I don't know how often that happens. From your experience, how often have employers asked you questions about your experience, about what support you actually need, before assessing whether or not that's even possible for them?
Sarah, that is a great question. I've never been asked, I don't think. Or if they think to ask, it's certainly the question's not directed to me, but it'll be directed to the referee that I've listed in my CV. But no one's ever asked me directly. Yeah, I know, it's quite shocking, isn't it? And I think that during an interview, those questions need to be raised. What are the best ways of us working together? How do we make this work? And my first response would be to organise deaf awareness training.
It is shocking. It's extremely, I'm sure it's not shocking for you. This has been your experience throughout your life, but it's definitely shocking for me. And it's disheartening to know that businesses could come up with a potential list of excuses before they've even asked someone the question or asked someone of their personal experience. It's really upsetting, honestly, and I think there's a responsibility on businesses to do better.
This is one example, but there are many examples of compromised inclusivity or inclusivity not occurring at all. I strongly encourage potential employees to ask me, to ask others who have a similar experience to me to become educated in this space, to become aware, to be open-minded. Let's say you're sitting in my shoes. Let's say you have a hearing loss. How will you communicate? How will you be involved in the team and the daily business? What processes need to be put in play? What questions do I need to ask?
It seems like a lot of the time in our world generally, in our society, people have a huge fear of being wrong. And so, or a fear of something. And so it restricts them from coming forward with questions or being curious. But actually, it ends up hindering them so much more in the long term. And I think that's the thing that we haven't quite clarified yet.
Yes, I agree. I agree, Sarah. I think we need to be confident when we ask questions. Things like, hope you don't mind. Can I ask you questions about your deafness? Can I ask you questions about how we can best manage this and not be fearful to ask? I can articulate in spoken English. I can also articulate in sign language. But the deaf space sees us as all being very different. So not every deaf person can articulate in English and not every deaf person articulates in sign language. And there's quite the spectrum. A profoundly deaf person can be fluent in spoken English or not, articulates only in Australian Sign Language or Auslan. Someone with a mild to moderate hearing loss doesn't articulate in English and uses sign language to communicate. So it's a vastly different life experience for all deaf people.
Humans amaze me sometimes because it's logical to understand that all people are individual people. We're all different. We've all had different experiences, grown up differently, experienced different things over time. Yet we so quickly, in all areas of life, tend to group people into sections that make sense to us in our mind. But it is really important to understand that no matter whether there's a disability involved or someone's from a different country or someone has a different hair color, it doesn't matter what's different about you. Everyone has an individual experience, and that should be accounted for and understood in all workplaces and in all situations.
Yes, you are absolutely right. I wholeheartedly agree. And the assumption is too, I think, that when you first meet a deaf person, that they are of a lower IQ, that they don't have educational experiences that are positive. Sometimes I find myself being more experienced and more highly educated than people who think less of me, and that the deaf community is rich in culture and language, but many people don't appreciate that or have knowledge of it.
That must be quite a emotionally taxing experience to be in conversations with other people who might think of less of you, yet you may be more intelligent than them or had more experience in that specific thing than them. And you mentioned something earlier about going outside of your comfort zone and doing that every single day, which again, I'm sure would be incredibly emotionally taxing. So how, as someone who does have to go outside of their comfort zone every single day, how do you manage that emotional toll?
When I'm functioning outside of my comfort zone, I really have to work hard at not showing my emotion and focus more on educating people. It takes a lot of patience and a lot of resilience. A lot of people have no deaf awareness at all. Maybe they've just never met a person who has a disability or who is deaf. I strongly encourage an open-minded approach and making sure that people feel included and putting yourself in their shoes. What impact would that have on me? We are all humans.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more and appreciate your perspective and experience. You had mentioned there was some bullying and discrimination within previous workplaces. Would you be open to sharing more about that experience?
It was actually a really awful experience, and it occurred while I was working in the childcare space. One of my tasks was to change the toddler nappies. while I'm changing the toddler nappy over the table, people behind me would shout at me. And once I remember a co-worker putting a child on the floor at the back of me without letting me know and still shouting at me from behind, which was dreadful. I also then had a professional review meeting with three other people in the meeting. There was a manager of the childcare space, I think perhaps one of the owners of the business, and a HR representative. They invited a support worker into the meeting and then subsequently into the childcare space with no consultation with myself. My qualifications were higher than any of those people in the room, but they saw me as being of a much lower level and inferring that I was cognitively not capable of doing the task at hand, but there was no discussion around any or all of it. I pushed back and suggested that they might have consulted me and we might have come to an agreement in the first place in terms of managing this situation. It was a really awful experience. And the same organization, one of the people from the meeting actually said to me that there'd been a miscommunication with some parents, and I sought clarification around what the miscommunication was, but they just pushed me aside and didn't clarify. And really, it was a gaslight experience, in my opinion. And that experience of autism, discrimination, I never felt equal in that space. And they completely destroyed my confidence.
That is a horrendous experience, and something you and no one else should ever have to go through. At another point in your career, you had worked at a small business that had helped you rebuild after this challenging period. Could you tell us more about how that experience helped you to regain trust and confidence?
So I finished work where I was and just let it go and decided that I would return to my first love, which is graphic design. I applied and was very fortunate to be successful and I got the job. The people in this business had no deaf awareness, knew nothing about deaf culture and language, but so warmly welcomed me. I couldn't believe it at the time. They were amazing. And honestly, I don't have the words really to describe how amazing this experience was. They allowed me to grow. They gave me opportunities. They developed my confidence and experience in the business. They trusted me to do the task at hand. I still am in contact with the people that I worked with at that time. Last year, I dropped in and visited all of them. It was so exciting to see them. They are an amazing team, such beautiful, wonderful people, and I will hold them dear to my heart forever.
It's amazing because it doesn't sound like having an deaf awareness was even a huge part of what made that workplace great. And so you can't even really say that the previous workplace in childcare, you know, it wasn't just the fact that they had a lack of deaf awareness, it was the fact that they had a lack of empathy, understanding, care, kindness.
Yes, that's very true. And the funny thing is that the childcare program that you have to pass before you can work in the space actually talks to inclusivity. The small business who had no training like we did nailed it. How do the two compare? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Especially working in a space like childcare where you would think your patience would have to be your patience, kindness, like everything that you need to be a functioning human should be at a higher level than what it would be because you're working with kids who need that time to understand and to learn, yet they didn't possess kind of any of those skills themselves to be able to help not only the kids but anyone they were working with do that as well.
Exactly. It makes no sense, does it?
You're able to communicate in 2 spoken and 5 sign languages. I find the concept of language itself as a part of communication so interesting, not only, you know, spoken or signed, but body language as well, and communication in general to be such an interesting topic. How has your view on communication itself been altered by your experiences and your multilingual abilities?
I was born hearing. My first language is therefore spoken English. When I was 3, I became deaf and I was introduced to a second language, Australian Signed English. When I was 13, then I was introduced to AUSLAN, Australian Sign Language. Australian Signed English and Australian Sign Language are very different semantically, grammatically, and how they're put together. I then became a student of American Sign Language, or ASL. I'm self-taught, actually. I would be watching the TV or YouTube or grabbing pieces from the internet or books. So teaching myself. When I traveled internationally to America, I was able to articulate in American Sign Language. I had to break through and adjust and make sure that I could converse in American Sign Language so that I could access the community events. If I didn't become fluent in ASL, it meant that I couldn't be involved in community events that I really was keen to be involved in. And so it meant I had no problem communicating with American Sign Language users. I grew up in a multicultural deaf community as a young person. So there were many and varied cultures that existed in that community that, alongside my close friends, have been a huge impact on my life. Early in 2005, there was an event called the Australian Deaf Olympics that occurred in Melbourne. So there were many international visitors to the city of Melbourne, and it was amazing, absolutely amazing. And I was a new kid on the block. I was a high school student interacting with a myriad of deaf person from a myriad of countries globally. It was extraordinary. And then the recent lockdown experience that we've all had during COVID, a bit of a time of doing not much, right? Sitting around the house, being a bit bored. So I was watching Korean theatre. I took on board Korean Sign Language from that. I taught myself from books, internet, writing, learning, both spoken and sign Korean languages. I had a great interest in the Korean Sign Language, so signed up for a Zoom class that was coming out of Seoul. The instruction for the Korean Sign Language was in Korean written language and Korean Sign Language with no English accessibility at all. I passed the course and got my qualification. I then flew to Korea and met my teacher twice. I've now been to Korea 3 times, so I speak, write, and sign in Korean. It's mind-blowing, isn't it, really, that I do speak 7 different languages and then cross those languages daily. My partner is Korean, so we might articulate or converse with each other in either language, either English, Korean, spoken, written, or signed.
Sarah, I often struggle to speak to people in spoken English, let alone everything you've done and all the incredible things you've achieved. So I genuinely think you strike me as someone who's so deeply curious, and that has allowed you to learn and absorb so many incredible parts of life that most people wouldn't be able to take in as deeply as you have. So I think that it's incredible.
Yes. Yes. There are over 300 different sign languages globally. A lot of people think that there's only one sign language globally, surely. And my response is to always ask a question. Is English a global language? Or do we have a multitude of languages globally? And so most of the time people will look at me quite confused or shocked. And I suggest that in the same way that English isn't spoken globally, nor are sign languages.
And again, that comes back to what we were talking about earlier, where people will group an experience into one thing or a language into there just being one. when typically every experience is unique, and even amongst individual spoken languages, English, spoken English as an example, is there's different slang, there's different all sorts of things no matter where you go. And so it's important to keep that in mind. I'm conscious of the fact that I'm taking up so much time, but I did want to ask you this one last question before I let everyone go. It had seemed like from the article I had read about you that you'd sent to me that you were having to alter who you were on your CV to appear more desirable by employers. And I think that this is important to touch on because it is something that I would imagine takes a huge toll on you emotionally, to have to alter almost parts of who you are to suit someone else in another situation. How has this impacted you?
It's a great question, Sarah. I have to remove the emotion from the task at hand when constructing a CV and focus on my skill set. And a CV is really selling yourself, who you are. And you need to be honestly who you are. But we no longer have to put our age, our date of birth, our residential address. It's really not, it doesn't influence the work that we're applying to do. So those things can be removed. I'll give you an example. If I put on my CV that I am a deaf person, in all likelihood, I will not be given an interview. So I remove that. It's not pertinent to the job that I'm applying for. The job description, as it appears, if I can tick off on all those tasks, that's key. And so then I will apply for that position. Perhaps another example, for one job that I applied for, I removed my address. I was living regionally at the time. I couldn't move closer to where the business was due to the price in rentals. And I don't need to share that private information with a potential employer. I was successful in this job application. I drove 4 hours daily back and forth to work so that I could do this job that I'd applied for. I was committed to attending the workplace every day. Had I put that in my CV, though, a potential employer might see that I wouldn't be committed to attending the workplace. And it's not pertinent to the job that I'm applying for. Qualifications are key to the work. Skill sets are key to the work. I have a childcare qualification. As you know, we've spoken about that as well, but I wouldn't put that in a graphic design job that I was applying for because it's not pertinent to the task at hand.
You're absolutely correct. What's important is that skill set. Would you have any final words for people who might be worried or nervous or fearful of being marginalized within a process of applying for a job, no matter what their personal experience is? What would you say to those people about how to navigate that?
Two sets of advice, one for business and one for individuals. I strongly encourage businesses to be open-minded, to do your research, to be open to employing people with a disability and making it successful. Look at job access. There's a website. There's plenty of information there about inclusivity and how to make it so. For individuals with a disability, apply for jobs. Strive to be employed in the space that you want to be employed in. If you feel that you're being discriminated against, report it. If you're in a current workplace that discriminates against you, leave. Please don't give up. Keep up with the search. If you follow Instagram, there's an Instagrammer called Advice with Erin. Listen to podcasts called This Is Work. Read books. Do research. Be self-taught. Be self-motivated. There's professional advice and guidance available.
I will link everything down below that you have mentioned for anyone who is interested in checking those things out. I wanted to thank you, Sarah, for the opportunity to talk to you today, for giving me the opportunity. I'm always grateful for anyone that chooses to spend their time with me, but especially you for helping to facilitate this conversation in a way that has taught me so much and has been extremely vulnerable about your own experience. I know you have to live this every day, but I can imagine it's still not easy having to relive and talk about and open up about those experiences. So I really do appreciate the time you've taken to share that with us, your deep curiosity. We'll continue to serve you, no doubt, in everything that you do. So I really appreciate your time. And thank you to the Auslan interpreters as well for being here. Appreciate your time as well.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The One Up Project. If you want to find more stuff just like this, check out our other apps or follow us at The One Up Project on Instagram or TikTok. See you there!